Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right, thank you for staying with us. We go quickly now to the book feature because, you know, it's a Tuesday today. And so this is what we do. And on the line with us today is lawyer and founding member of the Cheeky Natives. It's a literary podcast, if you are not familiar with it. Letlhogonolo Mogwerane is my guest this evening. Letlhogonolo, I know that you are looking fine wherever you are. Thank you so much for joining us. Hello.
Good evening, Pumelo. I must confess that I really love you because this is way past my bedtime. But when I heard it was you, I was like, I'm a fight to stay up. So just know that it's all love.
I really, really appreciate it. And listen, what a selection. I absolutely love it. Let's start with Patient 12A by Lesedi Molefi. Just something that I think is a good selection for this time of the year, because I've been speaking to a lot of people, and you know you'll have to give me your account. People in this country, even if it is the beginning of Feb, are exhausted, are stressed. We were speaking to Sadek yesterday, and they were telling us that before COVID, they had about 300 people log in a call. During COVID, maybe 600. Right now, it's gone up to 3,000 a day. People are going through the most.
I think you're completely correct, right? And I think that the one reason that the numbers are spiking is in some ways mental health has been destigmatized. You know, now we're no longer suffering in silence. And I think that's why I chose Lesedi's book, Patient 12, right? Because we often think of cisgender men who are heterosexual, who are supposed to be these machos, men don't cry. And we see Lesedi's account of this time he spent at the psychiatric clinic in 2016, right? And although it's a snapshot, you know, a memoir of this time period, it's also a memoir about his life and how hard it's been, right? And how kind of he had to unlearn a number of things, right? I really love the book. The writing is so delicious. But I think it's also a call to be like, let's not take for granted that, like, we need to be okay mentally. And if we have the resources, because I think that's also the point that Lesedi is making, is that he was fortunate at the time to have medical aid to be able to go to a psychiatric facility. So resources are so important for our own mental health. So when we do have the resources, let's, you know, I had my first therapy session of the year today.
Oh, wow.
And I often tell people that I go to therapy as a way to process. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with me. I just think it's so good to speak to someone who is outside of me, who's able to give me a different perspective on things. So for me, this book is that, right? It's Lesedi says he's looking for himself in a building he's never been in before. And a few nights ago, he was ready to rid himself of himself. But now he is here and in a different way. And in many ways, I think that's the book is about that. Just how do we get the help that we need? I mean, one of the things I remember from the book is this. He recounts a story of a woman who he meets at the psychiatric facility. And this woman said she had just, you know, had a miscarriage, and she was going through a tough time. And her boss called, and she basically, during the workday, was holding a knife and wanted to stab her boss. And her boss called the police and called an ambulance. And the boss said to her, you can decide whether you want to be a murderer or someone who wants to get help. And just the grace, right, in that moment to be like, even though someone was endangered, they extended grace because they understand that grief can do profound things to a person. So this book was really such a wonderful, wonderful read.
And for me, I think what was wonderful about this book is the fact that, yes, you know, it's about him, but it's also about South Africans and their own daily trauma. And how just being a South African in itself is harrowing in many ways. And the resilience, which we, you know, we like to glorify this thing called resilience. But I think this helps us. This helps us push through that to say, no, you know, we're not okay. You know, we cannot be glorifying resilience. South Africans are not okay.
Yeah, and that's true. And it's interesting because in the story of Lesedi, he speaks about his mom, right?
Yeah.
Who kind of has diagnosed mental health. And the mom grows up in a family that kind of, you know, black families are kind of like, wahlanya, umakhakha, and those type of things, right? Without saying that this may be a mental issue, right? This woman was essentially almost like given to another man who beat her to a pulp. So of course she has got trauma that she needs to deal with, but she's in this family that doesn't want to acknowledge the trauma. So I think it's also a call for black people in particular and South Africans in particular to be honest about the things that we've been through and to not, you know, kind of sweep it under the rug and just say, ah, no, it's going to be okay, because it's not. You know?
Yeah. So it's really a big one. And you know what? I love the fact that a guy wrote this. You know what I mean? For South Africa, we tend to allow only certain people to feel vulnerable and not others. We have a culture where we don't allow young men in particular to voice how they're feeling and to be given space. So I love that. I love that. You know, young men can look at this and say, "Oh, it's okay for me to stand up and say I'm also not okay. I'm struggling."
And I think it's cathartic, right, for him and for everybody who reads the book to see themselves, right? You know, James Baldwin says, "I thought my heartbreak was unprecedented until I read," right? Mm. And so for me, I think people who pick up this book may find themselves and be like, "Oh, I'm not the only one. I'm not the only guy who is struggling with this and struggling with that." So I agree with you. I think that in many ways, this book may open a number of conversation between men that will destigmatize mental health and allow men to be more vulnerable.
Okay. And then we move to a novel. And So I Roar by A.B. Dare. Oh, I love this.
I love this.
I just love this. Nigerian writer, renowned. Okay, let me give you a space.
So Abi Dare is known for her book, The Girl with the Loudening Voice, right? Which was a huge success. People loved it. I'm one of those people who didn't love The Girl with the Loudening Voice. I think for a number of reasons, I was just like, who is this book written for? Who is the audience? Mm. But I feel differently about So I Roar.
Yep.
And it's a sequel to The Girl with the Loudening Voice. And Abi Dare just does a magical thing in And So I Roar. So we again met with Aduni and Tia, and we're taken to, like, the book is literally 24 hours. Mm. Everything that happens in the book happens in a period of 24 hours. Mm. And it's racy. We get to talk about the impact of climate change on rural black women in rural Nigeria. We talk about, like, the kind of how patriarchy impacts people. We meet, like, wonderful young girls and hear about their stories. It's just, it's really, really, really lovely. And there is a part, you know, we get introduced to Tia and her interior life. Mm-hmm. And in Tia and her interior life, we also grapple with mother-daughter relationships and also, like, kind of secrets. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter how they are, they do impact relationships in a profound way.
So there are just little moments. I mean, there are things that I love the book, but there are things I also didn't like. I didn't like the monologues. I'm going to call them the monologues. Sometimes it just went on
too long. The Oprah show. I love the Oprah show.
Which sometimes for me were just way too long. Way too long. I mean, the long speeches, I think, just lingered on for too long, especially for a novel. That was just one thing I didn't like. But I love how godliness comes through in so many ways. I loved that, and there are little things that speaks to whether you believe or not. It is, you know, and that comes through in so many gracious ways. And I think there's a quote where she says, "Whether you believe in the sun or not, it will still shine." And I think there's another one where she says, "What you believe in, do not believe in, the world will still run itself," something like that. And I just think there is something quite wonderful, the universality in how she presents godliness. So you don't have to be a particular kind of a believer, but she does reach out to a sense of just a sense of a bigger wonder. In my sense, a bigger wonder, which I really, really like that. Again, that theme of resilience and courage, I think also comes through in this book.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's interesting because I kind of want to push back on the monologues. Mm-hmm. I thought what she was trying to do with the with the monologues was give these girls who the patriarchy, the culture, the world has taken from, that they had an opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. So Aduni was allowing these girls to have an opportunity because she was the girl with the loudening voice, right? And so they roar, and they roar in their own words, right? We often speak about, like, kind of, you know, we speak on behalf of people. I speak for the marginalized. But I think what she was saying is that the marginalized can speak for themselves. All they do need is access. And so I loved the kind of Oprah Winfrey monologue shows, because it was these, for the first time, these girls were telling their stories to someone who actually wanted to listen.
So what she also does very well, though, is to give different and distinct perspectives. That's hard. You know what I mean? That's hard for a writer to do.
Yes.
And she's very good at just distinct perspectives, which I think comes through beautifully in this particular piece.
Look, as I say, I loved Abidari. And the girl with a louding voice. And interestingly enough, if you don't listen to the Cheekinators, please listen to the Cheekinators. And just stay tuned, because we have a conversation with her coming out about the book.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that's going to be exciting.
No. It's wonderful. And, you know, especially if you haven't been to Nigeria, and this is a lovely way to also introduce you to a space and a people, you know, in a gentle way, in a beautiful way, in an authentic way. So this is definitely a real wonderful pick. It's going to be just wonderful if you just need to chill. Allow me to introduce myself, Boonyi Nwabinelli.
Listen. Alma told me about this book. She was like, you need to read this book. And I was like, okay, maybe not. And I then started reading the book. And I was like, oh my gosh, it is so good. I remember sleeping late one night because I just wanted to know what was happening. So the book essentially is about, you know, Anuri, who she's kind of had enough, right? Yeah. She's an unwilling start to a stepmother's social media empire before mom influencers were even a thing. Yes. And so for the book is really interesting for me when we think about the moment that we're in, right? Where there are a lot of mommy influencers and a lot of, like, children on social media. And the book kind of explores, like, the detrimental effect or the impact that this may have on the children once they grow up, because what if they don't want to be a part of it, but their whole lives has already been on social media? But I think it's also a book that speaks about the beauty of friendship.
Yeah.
Anuri has this beauty, these two beautiful friends, and I'm just a lover of, like, really important, great, healing friendships. And the book does that. The book also is interesting because it's also an interracial dynamic, because the stepmom is a white English woman who's marrying a Nigerian man, who's married a Nigerian man. And then they have a daughter, another daughter, and this little sister is now almost falling kind of into the trap of the mommy influencing trend, because, you know, the mom wants to continue. But the older sister is like, I won't let what happened to me happen to her. And so she wants to fight and protect her sister. So it's a wonderful book and a cautionary tale about what could happen if you're not careful as a mom influencer.
It's lovely, because I don't think we see this kind of literature a lot. You know, we're so judgmental as well of those kinds of people. But it just goes against all the things that you believe about social media influencers and so on. It's absolutely wonderful. Let's go.
And it makes you think, right? It makes you think about, like, social media. Because we often, like, innocuously, like, post and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it makes us think about, oh, wait, like, what happens? And so for me, it was that, just to be like, social media is not all nice. It can be harmful.
It can be really, really difficult. And then from a fave, Dr. Tlaleng, A Guide to Sexual Health and Pleasure.
So I mean, she's my best friend, so, you know, I gotta talk about my best friend. I thought that A Guide to Sexual Health and Pleasure is really important in this particular moment. We're seeing a rise of anti-rights and anti-women, anti-LGBTI movements, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing the effect of what happened since the presidency of Donald Trump, where a number of PEPFAR funding has been taken away, which has impacted a large number of so-called global South countries, mm-hmm. right? We've seen on social media, I think about VITS RHR, which is a NGO that provides hormone to trans people.
Yes.
They've had to close down because of the way the funding model works, right? Mm-hmm. So they can't give people hormones. And I mm-hmm. thought A Guide to Sexual Health and Pleasure begins to make us think about the impact of like these big things and how they impact our lives as just ordinary people.
Yeah. So, you know, it's easy to dismiss the book. I wanted us to stay on this for a while. It's easy to dismiss the book and say, it's about tough. You know, let's get to it.
But it's not.
It's not.
You know,
it's absolutely
it's not.
it's not, because I think it's surprising, maybe not, that people go about knowing so little about their bodies. And she has this wonderful way of demystifying all that sometimes can be too much jargon about what's actually going on with us. All the things that you may struggle to explain to yourself or to your children, maybe even. Mm. And things that you may be too embarrassed to even ask about, you know. And I find that this, from a doctor, she just has such an easy way of breaking it down. And breaking down what you are feeling and the uncertainties about your body. That for me is that's the gem for me. It's just accessible by a doctor.
I agree with you. And I think also it gives you the confidence, right?
Yes.
I know a number of people who've read the book who've said to her and said to us that I'm so grateful that you wrote the book because I'm now more confident to go into a doctor's room and explain what I'm feeling, right? Mm. But also doctors who've said, thank you so much, because I've never thought about what a painkiller or diabetes, how it impacts a person's sex drive, right? And I think that's important to think that there are certain things that happen physiologically that may impact how you do particular things in everyday.
Mm.
And for me, we don't know, but as a result of this book, now we know. So it's not all in your head. It literally is happening. But I think also what's been important for me is in this kind of age of speaking about consent, what she does, she also does a very beautiful exposition of what consent means, right? And it's always stuck with me. She says, consent is more than a yes or a no.
Mm.
Consent must include where something starts, where something ends. Consent must include what we're going to do. And so the idea of this kind of consent being a continuous thing, just because I've asked for consent to kiss you doesn't mean I have consent to touch your chest, right? And for me, that's really beautiful to think about. Like, even we don't know that having to hug someone and say, hey, can I hug you? You're asking for consent. So it's not even about sex in particular, but it's also about people's personal space. How do we begin to ask for consent in our everyday lives?
And I just want to tell those who are listening that, just as a nugget, Kaya FM features in the book, and I think it's hilarious, by the way, where Kaya features.
Oh.
Kaya
yes,
features.
That is hilarious.
It's very funny. It's very funny. I don't think it was funny then, but it's very funny. Funny now. So yeah, if you're a Kaya listener, yeah, somewhere in there, Kaya features, and I think it's absolutely delightful. Let's talk a little bit. I mean, I usually like to introduce the person who's going to contribute to the listeners and why you and books. So a doctor and a lawyer who have very busy lives and amazing careers decide to start this Cheeky Natives. Let's talk about its genesis.
So Alma and I have known each other for close to 15 years.
Yeah.
And when we first met, like, our first encounter was about books, and we used to go around to book launches and just engage with the authors, and a number of people were like, do you guys have like a radio show, something like where can we hear more of you? And we were like, no, we don't. And so when one of the books that actually made us really consider it is The Yearning by Mohalema Shekgo. That book was so deeply profound. And she was actually the first author that we had on the Cheeky Natives, you know. And so that's where we started our love for books. We've been reading since we were like four. And I read every single day for leisure. I wake up very early in the morning so that I can read for leisure, because I believe that if I give to myself the best time of the day, then I can show up better in the world. And so the Cheeky Natives is really that, is that we speak to Black people across the globe about their books, because we feel that Black writers and our interior lives are important and should be discussed. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the cool thing is some of the authors have said the conversations they've had on the podcast are some of the best they've had about their book. And it's really fun. I think it's really fun. I love books. She loves books. And we get to talk to people, sometimes our own wildest dreams.
And when did your love for books sort of emerge, just as an individual?
When I was young, right? So as a young queer kid who's awkward, I was not playing around with everyone. And I remember meeting someone who grew up like in the street behind me, who saw me at a debating concert like a number of years, like probably like in matric or something. And when she said to me, she says, "I remember you because you used to sit on your grandmother's stoop and just read a book, right? And look at us judgingly." I obviously wasn't looking at people judgingly. I was struggling with my own kind of sense of existence, and I felt that books were that constant companion. And so that's where my love for books started.
And I mean, can you pick the book that was sort of the one that was your crutch in a way?
I can't, right? And I feel like true readers, right? When people ask you that question, it's like, no, it's unfair, because all these books have been my crutches, right? Yeah. But I will say that in my kind of older years, one book that I return to is All About Love by bell hooks. There's just something deeply profound about bell hooks talking about how the primary relationships that we have, the primary caregiving, impact the way that we show up in life. And in order for us to show up more meaningfully, we really have to face ourselves. And it's just a beautiful reminder that you always have to face yourself.
Yeah, no. Bell Hooks is one to return to all the time. All About Love is also that book that you can put it down and come back. You know what I mean? Put it down and come back and digest and sit with it and digest and go over and over it again. So I see how that book was quite... Has it changed for you over the times you've come back to it?
I have, right? It's been interesting because... When I lost my mom, I came back to All About Love because Bell speaks about love. You grieve because you love, right? And she says we should think about grieving, mourning a celebration and mourning, right? And we grieve because we love. And she really made me think differently about like the grief that I was having about my mom. I felt like we had a complicated relationship, so I didn't feel like I could grieve a particular way. But All About Love really like reframed a lot of what was happening. And so I returned to it for different reasons. But one of the reasons is the chapter on mourning is absolutely beautiful.
Okay. Cheeky Natives, how often do you guys release an episode?
Every 2 weeks. Yeah. So every second Friday, it's called Cheeky Fridays. Mm-hmm. And the episode we've just released is by a wonderful friend of the Cheeky Natives, Professor Barbara Boswell, who is an absolutely wonderful writer. She wrote a book called The Comrade's Wife.
Listen.
And we have the most meaningful and deep conversations about that book.
Listen, that book. That book. Okay, so we need to have a conversation about that book soon. So we'll have that conversation. That is the book to have. In fact, people must just go get the book, and then when we have the conversation, they know exactly what we're talking about. Letlhogonono, thank you. Thank you for staying up. Thank you for doing this. And people must go and check you out at Cheeky Natives on YouTube. And that's that.
Thank you so much, Pumelo. Have a wonderful evening.
Have a lovely one. Letlhogonono Mogwerane is one of the founders of Cheeky Natives. He's a lawyer as well and founder member of Cheeky Natives. So they do this podcast. It's just lovely because it's so casual and it's so them, right? It's so authentic. And they speak to authors about the books that they found interesting. And they're not necessarily all new, but I think they're really, really wonderful. And so you're going to love it. Cheeky, Cheeky Natives, Native.
And if you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.